Back together again, as always, you and I, Thursday, August 17th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We welcomed Only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi with a great update on the Bridgeport Democratic mayoral primary field, who's in, who's out, who might be in, who might be out. We also had a few thoughts on some controversy surrounding the state's legal marijuana industry and so-called equity applicants. Hey, let's do this fascinating first. Only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi is here with always some fascinating stuff. Lenny, hi, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
Papa Pacelli, how are you today?
I'm living the dream, Lenny. You tell me, though, what's the deal with getting these signatures verified for a likely Democratic mayoral primary, Lenny? It's Thursday already. Do we not know what the deal is here? What's going on?
In part, we know. So there's going to be a Democratic primary for mayor September 12th, and that's like less than 4 weeks. Mayor Joe Ganim's on the ballot because he's endorsed. Challenger John Gomes has been certified for the primary because he reached the threshold of roughly 2,100 signatures, certified signatures, to make the ballot. State Senator Marilyn Moore is not going to get there. This is unofficial.
Okay.
The registrar's office hasn't made an official announcement, but my sources inside City Hall tell me she's hundreds of signatures short of making a ballot, making the ballot, which would be a big blow to her, considering she came so close 4 years ago, against Joe Ganim.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing about this signature process, you have to be organized. It's a very labor-intensive process. You need 5% of signatures from 5% of the voters in Bridgeport. And in this case, it's not a case of disappearing ink, but a case of not having enough signature ink to make the ballot. And that's how it works. So, will Marilyn Moore have a plan B, maybe for the general election on the Working Families Party line? We don't know that yet. So still to be heard from is the signature count for Lamon Daniels, who's also trying to make the ballot. And he's got a much stronger chance of making the ballot because he has submitted more signatures than Marilyn Moore. The workers in the registrar's office, as we speak, are still counting. They're going through the numbers, possibly have a decision about him of tomorrow morning. But it's going to probably have some decision by tomorrow because by state law, absentee ballots have to be available by Tuesday, which means a ballot order has to be in place that goes to the town clerk's office, and they got to print the ballots. So this is all kind of come together probably by tomorrow.
Assuming, Lenny, that Marilyn Moore, as you say, and this is just an assumption, when we finally find out who made it and who didn't, if she's in the not making it category, where do you think, given the three choices, two definitely three you think on that ballot, where does her support go?
Probably it really depends, split up. So historically, so Marilyn Moore is not like a Donald Trump. Her votes are not transferable.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, every time she's supported a person, the person hasn't won. So her votes are not transferable. So I think a decent part of it could go to Lamon Daniels if he makes the ballot. But I think in part it will be split up. But I would say primarily if Lamon Daniels makes the ballot, he would probably be the beneficiary of a number of her votes.
So let's look ahead, Lenny. And by the way, Lenny Grimaldi is the guest only in Bridgeport.com. Let's say for argument's sake right now that Joe Ganim wins the primary. Okay, so he is the Democratic primary winner. He advances to the general election. What happens, do you think, with any one, two, or three of the other candidates? We talked about, you did, of course, the Working Families Party. There's the Green Party. There's the Independent Party. How do you think this might shake out, roughly?
There's the Pacelli-Grimaldi Party.
Oh, my God. Imagine that. Oh, just put the two of us in the office and let us have at it. But in all seriousness, not speaking for you, but for me, in all seriousness, how do you think this might shake out?
I think you could see a case where John Gomes is on the ballot with in the general election on the Bridgeport Independent Party line.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to the person who's in control of that, and he says that Gomes is going to be his candidate. So if Gomes is win the primary, he's going to have another bite at the apple. I think it's possible that the Working Families Party will endorse, if not Marilyn Moore. I think if Moore doesn't make the ballot, Working Families is going to say, she looks weak. Do we waste our time?
Yeah.
Do they look at someone like Lamont Daniels in the general election? That could be a possibility. I think Lamont Daniels is also trying to petition his way onto the general election ballot as well. So there could be a scenario where he might have all four people trying to qualify for the primary that could be on the general election ballot. It's going to be very, very difficult. You know, if Gannon wins the primary, it's going to be very, very difficult to beat him in a general election.
So,
as a Democratic standard bearer.
Yeah. So where then, Lenny, does the influence of the Bridgeport Generation Now votes people, where do they turn their sights on this?
Right. Great question, because they've put a lot of money and effort into Marilyn Moore, and now they're going to come up empty. And so where do they pivot to? I think part of that question is going to be, if Marilyn Moore is supported and endorsed by the Working Families Party and they have not made that decision yet, they may pivot right to the general election.
Hmm.
Let's suppose the Working Families Party decides, you know, we're going to stay out of this thing. We're not going to endorse anybody.
Yep.
You might see the, you know, Bridgeport Generation Now votes pivot to someone like Lamont Daniels.
Hmm.
You know, you think he'd probably be, you know, more suited, you know, to them. That could be a possibility. But, yeah, it's really an open question. And no one in Gen Now votes knows right now where they're going to go. It's a work in progress. And only, you know, basically less than 4 weeks to the primary. You know, it's a very compressed cycle right now. Where, you know, this is where all the thunder, all the money is going to be spent. And you've got Marilyn Moore going there, well, I'm not going to play in the primary, so what do I do? Working Families, which is scheduled to spend a whole bunch of money on her, and no one will be able to do that, at least for the primary. Maybe they go, okay, we'll take a look at Lamont Daniels, perhaps. You know, it's all this is going to shake out within the next 4 or 5 days.
Interesting. And Lenny, we have to ask you, because it's been part of the reports now for months, since the last time we talked to you, Lenny, last week when I was doing the morning show, your old boss was indicted again. What is going on here? What is he thinking? Get into the head of one Donald John Trump for us.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, it's like almost a credential to get indicted. He's been indicted so many times, right? So. You know, so, you know, we had our conversation last week about, you know, the federal government charging him for January 6th. And they really wanted that streamlined because they don't want too many defendants to gum up the works, because you get lawyers involved and it slows the process down, which is Trump wants.
Yeah.
This latest charge, state of Georgia, bringing this RICO charge against, you know, the president, the former president, and 17 or 18 others. This is a whole different animal. You know, for your listeners, RICO is Racketeer Influenced Corrupt Organization Act, which was passed by Congress, but basically 50 years ago, as a tool for prosecutors to go after organized crime figures. So along the way, a lot of states, like the state of Georgia, have also passed, you know, the RICO statutes, more on a state, local level. And so this prosecutor in charge of this case against Trump in Georgia, she wants to create for a jury this mass conspiracy criminal enterprise to, you know, overturn an election. You know, it's a funny thing about, you know, the RICO statute. You got Rudy Giuliani up into his neck right now.
And he was a prosecutor. And he was a federal prosecutor.
Right. So Giuliani earned his stripes as the chief law enforcement officer in the Southern District of New York, using the RICO statute to go against mobsters. And now he's been charged himself. And he's got a real problem, because Donald Trump won't pay his legal bills. You know, he won't pay his legal bills. And, you know, Rudy's pockets aren't as deep as Trump. Yeah. You know, plus, you know, what Trump has right now is he's got, you know, his PAC that he's using the nickels and dimes and contributions of people to pay his legal fees. And you made a great point earlier today. You don't have a lot of first class lawyers stepping up for Trump.
No, you don't.
Because you know? you get dirty, and you're seeing the problem is when you're in Trump's orbit long enough, you're going to get mud on you. You're just going to get mud on you, and all these people that get charged, you know, that's the situation. To get to your point, so I apologize not answering your question directly. You know, his state of mind still is, let's just gum it up. We gotta put the brakes on this process, and as long as we possibly can. And you know, a guy like DeSantis. You know, you mentioned his debate points of going public.
Jeez.
You know, DeSantis can't be his own person.
Yeah, I know.
Because he's got his consultants are saying, be nice to Trump and hope he implodes. That's a DeSantis strategy. Yeah. Be nice to Trump and hope he implodes under the weight of all these legal challenges.
Well, he hasn't imploded yet. Why do they think that's going to happen?
Well, I think that the implosion is going to come. You know, I think from their perspective, a conviction. So let's suppose early, by a conviction. So if I think that, so my sense is the January 6th case is going to go first.
Okay. Right.
You know, this one that he was charged in lately, that's going to take a long time to sort out all these defendants. January 6th is going to go first. If it gets started the first quarter of, you know, of 2024 and it doesn't go his way, they probably feel it's an opening. It's really more of a leap of faith because the problem with someone like DeSantis, so you'd argue that, you know, after Trump, he's probably next in line or that could very well change. But it's a double-edged sword.
Sure.
You know, it's double-edged swords because he's defending Trump, and then Trump implodes and he's the guy in the general election.
Well, yeah.
Democrats are going to use that.
I know.
That against him over and over. So it is a double-edged sword.
Sure. Vinny,
somewhere along the way.
Yeah. Lenny, final question before we let you go. And then the key thing here, because I'm running short on time. Now, if he's stressed out about this, your old boss, and you've been there, what is he eating right now? What is his stress meal besides the Diet Coke? Are we doing cheeseburgers, hamburgers?
Oh, man. Cheeseburger, fries, Coke. You know, big ass lump of cheese on it, throw mayo on it. You know?
Mayo, All right, Lenny, thanks. So
mayo it up, baby. Mayo it up.
He likes his mayo, huh? Wow.
Throw a lot of gum on there to gum up the works.
Nice.
Yeah, he's going to. He may end up 350 pounds by the time he gets to trial. You
know? Lenny, thanks. Only in Bridgeport.com. Listen, send me a text tomorrow if there's anything breaking on the mayor's primary, okay?
Absolutely. Will do. Thank you.
Thanks, Lenny. Appreciate it. Only in Bridgeport.com. So the Donald likes a lot of mayo and cheese on his burgers. Yikes. Do you remember? No, I hope you do. During the whole marijuana legalization thing here in Connecticut, well, about 2 years ago, I think this finally came to fruition. And I kept saying something that to you, and I kept saying, hey, trust me on this, because this is going to happen. And sure enough, it has. Do you remember that a big impetus of part of the legalization of recreational marijuana in this state was the fact that it was going to right past wrongs. In other words, well, there were certain areas of cities, certain neighborhoods that were over-policed, so now there were going to be these equity applicants, primarily Black and Hispanic applicants, that we were going to get in on the ground floor of this business. Because for some reason, we felt bad that when the laws were different, people knowingly broke the law. And somehow we got all embarrassed about that. And you couldn't say, well, they broke the law when the law was what the law was back then. So we're going to now change the law. So in some strange way for reparations or white guilt or whatever, we went ahead and we said, well, we're going to, not we here on the show, but the state went ahead and said, well, you know, we're going to have these equity applicants. And a lot of states have this. And the reason they have these equity applicants is not because they care about people. The state of Connecticut, nobody cares about these people. They don't. The whole, as I mentioned, you know, a couple of years ago, and I said, keep an eye on this. The whole thing about equity applications or equity applicants was mostly to quell opposition in inner cities by a lot of black and Hispanic leaders, members of the local clergy, some community groups that weren't really rah-rahing the introduction of adult use legal cannabis. I had a couple of people on my show to that end, and they said, hey, listen, this is the last thing that a lot of inner city neighborhoods need, and the fact that now we are being told that this is going to be some sort of economic salvation to people in our communities, I was told by some guests, doesn't wash. And I kind of agreed with that, and I thought at the time, and I said, listen, I might be proven wrong here, and I hopefully would be. I don't think I am here. But I remember saying at the time, I might be proven wrong, but it sounds to me like this is the worst kind of tokenism. Like we're telling black and Hispanic people, hey, because a lot of you folks, for whatever reason, you broke the law, you got arrested several years ago, we're suddenly going to wrap our wonderful arms around you and let you deal in something that's not of any nutrition value, that isn't really your typical small business. We're going to say, hey, we are going to be so special to you that we're going to let you get in front of something that changes your state of mind when you use it. Okay. And I remember saying, watch, because this business needs the legal marijuana business. We all know, we knew at the time and we still know, the legal marijuana business needs money. You need capital to get into it. You're not making shakes. You're not making smoothies. You're not selling sandwiches, as my aunt used to say. You're not selling ice cream. You're selling a relatively expensive product in a highly competitive atmosphere, and you need capital. You need the green Jesus. You need the dead presidents. You need mother's milk. You need money. And honestly, how many of these equity applicants are going to be up front with that money they need? So I remember saying a couple of years ago that this equity applicant thing is going to be, if not in long order, in short order, people are going to start screaming about this because they will come to the realization that, geez, I came to 5 minutes in, and if a dummy like me can come to it 5 minutes in, I'm sure a lot of other people did, but they wouldn't say anything. They're going to come to the realization that the equity application process here in the state is tokenism. I mean, how could you not see it? So lo and behold, this story pops up. And we haven't done a lot on this because there was a lot of stuff going on with some guy named Trump and all that. Well, look at this. Look at this. Hearst Connecticut Media, Connecticut Insider. Critics say cannabis equity partnerships in Connecticut favor large corporations. Really? You mean like I said it would? Two and change years ago, when everybody was saying, oh, this is going to lift our people out of poverty. This is the kind of equity we need after years of over-policing. Yeah, right. Okay. Jordan Fenster's story here. It's interesting. Under state law, the number of dispensaries a person can open in Connecticut is limited to one and in some cases two, but some of the biggest cannabis companies in the country are planning to open as many as six retail stores, even though state law says you're limited to one or two. So Jordan writes here, surprise, surprise, that's me on the surprise, not him. This has raised questions about the fairness of a legalization initiative that was intended to provide economic opportunity for groups disproportionately impacted by drug prosecution. So, shocking, huh? Oh, wait a minute. This isn't going to be some sort of, this isn't going to be the be-all and end-all that it was sold to us as? State statutes were amended last year to allow some individuals who partner with large companies, only a single dispensary, but the companies they partner with are allowed two for every medical cannabis dispensary they already manage. This has enabled operators of medical cannabis dispensaries the chance to open multiple locations. Adam Lewis said during a recent interview, he's a New Britain gentleman, a cannabis user who testified before the Social Equity Council, quote, "The way I see it, it's really nothing more than a written invitation for the deepest pocketed vultures to swoop in for more shameless cash grabbing." Mr. Lewis, amen. Democrat Josh Elliott, Hamden, very progressive member of the Democratic Caucus, says, quote, "The legislature was trying to allow people a foothold into the market, but at a certain point, we all recognize that the laws of capitalism would be central." I don't know how much these larger conglomerates becoming such outside players in the equity market was really what we had envisioned. Come on, Josh. Nobody saw this coming. Or did you folks, did you guys and gals in the General Assembly, did you, as I think here with all due respect, you knew this was going to be the outcome here. You knew it. How could you not know this? And now all of a sudden people are like, well, geez, you know, there are a lot of these big companies using, folks who may fall into the equity track to get a foothold. You think? But when I and other hosts around the state and even some members of the General Assembly were out there saying, hey, the whole equity thing here has every possibility, every chance of being a scam. People were like, oh, yeah, no. This is going to help people elevate themselves because, you know, there was this over-policing. Oh, okay. So far, only so-called equity joint ventures have opened since Connecticut legalized recreational cannabis. All, here it is, kids, all partially owned by large multi-state cannabis companies. Now, if it's legal, which apparently it is, I've got nothing against those cannabis companies operating here in Connecticut. The more the merrier. You know, the more locations that open up, that's a good, probably lowers the price point. Competition is good. It's economics 101. But it is shaking out exactly like I and other people said it would. You have these companies coming in. They find somebody who fits the profile, fits the mold of an equity operator, and it basically works. Works like saying, "Hey, you know, you're kind of what we're looking for in an equity applicant. So you apply, and we'll help you with the money." So again, I hate to say I told you so, but in this case, I will. You know. People rally against big pharma, big tobacco, big oil, big tech. Well, you know what? That's how big is how you survive. And now in the state, you're getting more and more big marijuana, which is fine legally, but they're hiding behind some of these equity applicants. So please phone me, call me when we get a real equity applicant who can find the capital. And the capital is not provided by some big, huge marijuana conglomerate. You know who's into big marijuana? Big tobacco. Now, I'm not saying that's every case here in the state, but it is what it is. Equity Applicants says here may partner with other organizations or individuals with an existing medical cannabis establishment called an Equity Joint Venture. Each of those existing medical dispensaries may open two such Equity Joint Ventures. So, again, as I said, as a lot of people said, I just wanted to raise your attention to this because this is a good I told you so. The notion that, at least at this point, this marijuana legalization, which is fine if you want to use, fine. If you want to grow more of your own, fine. Have at it. Do it legally. I don't care. But let's not kid ourselves into thinking that this is going to be some sort of, you know, equity reparation for people who may have had loved ones or family members or themselves have been policed or over-policed. Over-policed. Is that like being a little pregnant? I'm not sure.